and lunged toward her father.
No, dear. Loki snapped his fingers. Instantly, Sam's legs buckled. She collapsed sideways on the floor and lay immobile, her eyes half closed. Her glowing spear rolled across the stones.
Sam! I lurched toward her, but Uncle Randolph intercepted me.
His bulk eclipsed everything. He gripped my shoulders, his breath an overwhelming combination of cloves and rotten fish.
Don't, Magnus, his voice fractured with panic. Don't make it worse.
Worse? I pushed him away. Anger hummed through my system. Jack felt light in my hand, ready to lash out. Seeing Samira unconscious at her father's feet, oh gods, I hoped she was only unconscious, I wanted to blade smack my uncle. I wanted to go full Uruts on Loki's face.
Give Randolph a chance, Annabeth's voice whispered in the back of my mind. He's family.
I hesitated, just enough to notice Uncle Randolph's condition. His gray suit was threadbare and smeared with ashes as though he'd been crawling through a chimney. And his face, across his nose, left cheek, and eyebrow, spread a horrible crater of red and brown scar tissue. A barely healed burn mark in the shape of a hand. I felt like a dwarf had punched through my abdominal cavity. I remembered the mark of Loki that had appeared on Randolph's cheek in the family photograph. I thought about my dream on the battlefield in Valhalla and recalled the searing agony on my own face when Loki had communicated with me, using Randolph as a conduit. Loki had branded my uncle. I fixed my gaze on the god of trickery. He still wore the offensive green tuxedo he'd been modeling in my battlefield vision, with his paisley bow tie at a rakish angle. His eyes gleamed as if he was thinking, "Go on, kill your uncle. This could be amusing." I decided not to give Loki the pleasure.
"You tricked us into coming here," I growled.
"Why, if you could just step through a magic doorway in a coffin?"
"Oh, but we couldn't," Loki said.
"Not until you opened the way.
Once you did, well,
you and Randolph are connected.
Or didn't you notice?"
He tapped the side of his own face.
"Blood is a powerful thing. I can always find you through him."
"Unless I kill you," I said. "Randolph, get out of the way."
Loki chuckled. "You heard the boy, Randolph. Step aside." My uncle looked like he was trying to swallow a horse pill.
"Please, Loki, don't."
"Wow," Loki raised his eyebrows. "It sounds like you're trying to give me an order. But that can't be right, can it? That would violate our agreement."
The words "our agreement" made Randolph wince. He shuffled aside, his facial muscles twitching around the edges of his new scar. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw Blitzen helping Hearthstone to his feet. I silently willed them to back away and stay safe. I didn't want anyone else in Loki's path. Sam still wasn't moving. My heart hammered against my ribs. I took a step forward.
"Loki, what did you do to her?"
God glanced down at his daughter.
"Who, Samira?
She's fine. I just willed her to stop breathing."
"You what?"
Loki waved away my concern. "Not permanently, Magnus. I just like to keep a firm hand on my children. So many parents are lackadaisical these days, don't you think?"
"He controls them," Randolph croaked.
Loki shot him an irritated look.
"Remind me how well you did as a father, Randolph. Oh, that's right. Your family is dead, and your only hope of seeing them again is me."
Randolph curled inward, withering. Loki turned back to me. His grin sent paisley patterns of ick crawling up my spine.
"You see, Magnus, my children owe their powers to me. In exchange, they must bend to my will when I require it. It's only fair. As I said, family blood is a strong connection. It's a good thing you listened to me and left Alex in Valhalla. Otherwise, we'd have two of my children unconscious."
He rubbed his hands together.
"Now, would you like to see more?
Samira's always so reluctant to shapeshift. Maybe I should force her into the shape of a cat for you.
Or a wallaby?
She'd make a very cute wallaby." The paisley ick swirled into my stomach, threatening to erupt. Finally, I understood Samira's reluctance to shapeshift.
"Every time I do it," she once told me, "I feel more of my father's nature trying to take hold of me."
No wonder Sam was afraid Loki could make her go through with the marriage to the giant. No wonder she worried about Alex Fierro, who shapeshifted without a second thought. Did other gods have that kind of control over their children? Could Frey... No, I wouldn't allow myself to think about that.
"Leave her alone," Loki shrugged.
"As you wish. I merely needed her out of commission. No doubt Galeer told you the Skolfnung's sword cannot be unsheathed in the presence of a woman. Fortunately, comatose women don't count. Randolph, hurry up now.
This is the part where you draw the sword.
Uncle Randolph licked his lips.
Perhaps it would be better if...
His voice deteriorated into a guttural scream. He doubled over, smoke curling from the scar tissue on his cheek. My face burned in sympathy.
Stop it! I yelled.
My uncle gasped. He stood up, steam still rising from the side of his nose.
Loki laughed.
Randy, Randy, Randy. You look ridiculous! Now we've been through this before. You want your family back from Helheim? I require full payment in advance. You bear my mark, you do what I say. It's really not that hard.
He pointed to the Skofnung blade. Fetch, boy. And Magnus, if you try to interfere, I can always make Sam's coma permanent.
I hope you won't, though. It would be terribly inconvenient with the wedding coming up.
I wanted to slice him down the middle like hell. I mean his daughter, Hell, who had two different sides. Then I wanted to glue him back together and slice him in half again. I couldn't believe I'd ever thought Loki was charismatic and silver-tongued. He'd called my uncle Randy. That by itself required the death penalty. But I didn't know the extent of Loki's control over Sam. Could he really make her permanently cataleptic with just a thought? I was also worried, sort of, about what might happen to Randolph. The idiot may have gotten himself into an evil bargain with Loki, but I understood why he'd done it. I remembered his wife, Catherine, on that sinking ship, Aubrey with her toy boat, Emma shrieking as she clutched her runestone inheritance, the symbol of all the dreams she would never grow up to realize. To my left, Hearthstone and Blitzen edged forward. Hearthstone had recovered enough to walk on his own. Blitz held the broadsword he must have retrieved from a zombie. I put out my hand, urging them to stay back. Randolph picked up the Skofnung sword. He drew it slowly from its sheath, a double-edged blade of cold gray iron. Along its central ridge, runes glowed faintly in every shade of blue, from permafrost to vein blood.
Jack quivered. Oh. Oh, wow.
Yes, indeed, Loki said. Now, if I could wield the blade and I couldn't have the fabled Sword of Summer, I would choose the Skofnung sword.
Dude may be evil, Jack whispered to me, but he has good taste.
Unfortunately, Loki continued, in my present state, I'm not really all here.
Blitzen grunted. First thing he said I agree with. That sword should never be drawn.
Loki rolled his eyes. Blitzen, son of Freya, you're such a drama dwarf when it comes to magic weapons. I can't wield Skofnung, no, but the chases are descended from the Norse kings of old. They're perfect.
I remembered Randolph telling me something about that, how the Chase family was descended from ancient Swedish royalty, blah blah blah. But I'm sorry, if it qualified us to wield evil swords, I was not going to put that on my resume.
Too dangerous, Hearthstone's signing was listless and weak, his eyes brimmed with fear. Death, the prophecy.
So the blade has a few quirks, said Loki.
I like quirks. It can't be used in the presence of women. It can't be drawn in daylight. It can only be used by one of noble lineage.
Loki nudged Randolph's arm. Even this guy qualifies.
Also, once the blade is drawn, it cannot be sheathed again until it has tasted blood.
Jack buzzed with a metallic whimper.
That's not fair. That is too attractive.
I know, right? Loki said. And the last little quirk of the sword.
Hearthstone, my friend, would you like to tell them or should I?
Hearthstone swayed. He grabbed Blitzen's shoulder. I wasn't sure if it was for support or just to make sure the dwarf was still there. Blitzen hefted his broadsword, which was almost as tall as he was.
Loki, you won't do this to Hearth. I won't let you.
My dear dwarf, I appreciate you finding the tomb's entrance. And of course, I needed Hearthstone to break the magic seal around that sarcophagus. You each played your part well, but I'm afraid I require just a bit more from you both. You want to see Samira happily married, don't you?
To a giant? Blitzen snorted. No.
But it's for a good cause. The return of what's-his-name's hammer. That means I need a proper bride price, and Thrym has asked for the Skofnung sword. It's a very reasonable exchange. The thing is, the sword isn't complete without the stone. The two are a set.
What do you mean? I asked. What stone?
The Skofnung stone. The whetstone that was made to sharpen the blade. With his thumbs and fingers, Loki made a circle about the size of a dessert plate.
About yay big? Blue with gray flecks? He winked at Hearthstone.
Sound familiar?
Hearthstone looked as if his scarf was choking him.
Hearth, I said. What's he talking about?
My elf friend didn't answer.
Uncle Randolph stumbled, now using both hands to hold up the cursed sword. The iron blade turned darker, and wisps of ice vapor twisted from its edges.
"It's getting heavier," Randolph gasped. "Colder!"
"Then we should hurry." Loki looked down at the unconscious form of Samira. "Randolph, let's feed this hungry sword, shall we?"
"No way," I raised my own blade. "Randolph, I don't want to hurt you, but I will."
My uncle let out a broken sob. "Magnus, you don't understand. You don't know what he's planning."
"Randolph," Loki hissed. "If you want to see your family again, strike!"
Randolph lunged, thrusting the cursed blade. And I completely misjudged his target. Stupid, Magnus. Unforgivably stupid. I was only thinking about Sam lying helpless at Loki's feet. I needed to defend her. I wasn't thinking about prophecies or how everything Loki did, even a casual glance at his daughter, was a trick. I stepped to intercept my uncle's strike, but he charged right past me. With a cry of horror, he buried the Skofnung sword in Blitzen's gut. Chapter 18. I need to learn many, many more cuss words in sign language. I howled with rage. I slashed upward, and the Skofnung sword flew out of Randolph's grip, along with... ew, you might want to skip this part. A couple of pink things that looked like fingers. Randolph stumbled back, cradling his fist against his chest. The Skofnung sword clanged to the floor.
Oh!
Blitzen's eyes widened. The sword had gone straight through his chainmail vest. Blood seeped between his fingers. He stumbled. Hearthstone caught him and dragged him away from Randolph and Loki. I wheeled around on Loki. I raised Jack's blade again and sliced through the god's smug face. But his form just shimmered like a projection.
"He swings, he misses!"
Loki shook his head.
"Really, Magnus? We both know you can't hurt me. I'm not fully here. Besides, fighting isn't your strong suit. If you need to take out your anger on someone, go ahead and kill Randolph, but do it quickly. We have a lot to talk about, and your dwarf is bleeding out."
I couldn't breathe. I felt like someone was pouring pure hate right down my throat. I wanted to cut down my own uncle. I wanted to pull this tomb apart stone by stone. Suddenly, I understood Ratatosk, the squirrel who only spoke malice and wanted to destroy the very tree he lived in. It wasn't easy, but I pushed down the anger. Saving Blitz was more important than getting revenge.
"Jack," I said, "watch these mainfritters. If they try to hurt Sam or take the Skofnung sword, go into Cuisinart mode."
"You got it."
Jack spoke in a deeper voice than usual, probably to impress the Skofnung sword.
"I'll protect the hot lady blade with my life. Oh, and also Sam."
I ran to Blitzen's side.
"That's it," Loki cheered. "There's the Magnus Chase I know and love. Always thinking of others. Always the healer."
I put my hands on Blitzen's gut, then glanced up at Hearthstone.
"You got any runes that might help?"
Hearth shook his head. His own Ratatosk-level hatred smoldered in his eyes. I could see how desperately he wanted to do something, anything, but he'd already used 2 runes this morning. Any more would probably kill him. Blitzen coughed. His face turned the color of putty.
I'm good, guys. Just need... a minute."
"Hold on, Blitz." Again, I summoned the power of Frey. My hands heated like the coils of an electric blanket, sending warmth into every cell of Blitzen's body. I slowed his circulation. I eased his pain. But the wound itself refused to heal. I felt it fighting me, tearing open tissue and capillaries faster than I could mend them, gnawing at Blitzen with malicious hunger. I remembered Hearthstone's prophecy. Blitzen, bloodshed, cannot be stopped. This was my fault. I should have seen it coming. I should have insisted that Blitz stay in Mimir's safe house eating delivery pizza. I should have listened to that stupid back-bay goat assassin.
"You're going to be fine," I said. "Stay with me."
Blitzen's eyes were starting to lose focus.
"Got sewing kit in my vest pocket. If that helps."
I wanted to scream. It's a good thing Jack was no longer in my hands, because I would have pulled a full-on Kylo Ren temper tantrum. I rose and faced Loki and Randolph. My expression must have been pretty frightening. Randolph backed all the way into a zombie niche, leaving a trail of blood from his wounded hand. I probably could have healed that for him, but I wasn't even tempted.
"Loki, what do you want?" I demanded.
"How do I help Blitzen?" The god spread his arms. I am so glad you asked. Happily, those two questions have the same answer.
The stone, Blitz gasped. He wants the stone.
Exactly, Loki agreed. You see, Magnus, wounds from the Skofnung sword never heal. They just keep bleeding forever, or until death, whichever comes first. The only way to close that wound is with the Skofnung stone. That's why the two are such an important set.
Harstone launched into a bout of sign language cursing so impressive it would have made a beautiful piece of performance art. Even if you didn't know ASL, his gestures conveyed his anger better than any amount of yelling.
Dear me, Loki said. I haven't been called some of those names since my last flighting with the Aesir.
I'm sorry you feel that way, my elfish friend, but you're the only one who can get that stone.
You know it's the only solution. You'd better run along home.
Home? My mind moved at the speed of cold syrup. You mean Alfheim?
Blitzen groaned.
Don't make Hearth go. Not worth it, kid.
I glared at Uncle Randolph, who was making himself at home in his zombie niche. With his ratty suit and scarred face, his eyes glazed from pain and blood loss, Randolph was already halfway to being undead.
What is Loki after? I asked him.
What does any of this have to do with Thor's hammer? He gave me the same desolate expression he'd worn in my dream, when he'd turned to his family on the storm-tossed yacht and said, I'll bring us home.
Magnus, I'm so...
Sorry? Loki supplied.
Yes, you're very sorry, Randolph, we know. But really, Magnus, do you not see the connection?
Maybe I need to be clear. Sometimes I forget how slow you mortals can be. A giant has the hammer.
He illustrated each word with exaggerated sign language.
Giant gives hammer back for Samira. We exchange gifts at wedding. Hammer for S-K-O-F-N-U-N-G.
Stop that, I snarled.
You understand then?
Loki shook his hands out.
Good, because my fingers were getting tired. Now, I can't give half a bride price, can I?
Thrym will never accept that. I need the blade and the stone. Fortunately, your friend Hearthstone knows exactly where the stone can be found.
That's why you arranged all this? Why you...
I gestured at Blitz, who lay in an expanding pool of red.
Call it incentive, Loki said. I wasn't sure you'd get me the stone merely for the purpose of Samira's wedding, but you'll do it to save your friend. And, I'll remind you, this is all so I can help you get back what's-his-name stupid hammer. It's a win-win. Unless, you know, your dwarf dies.
They are such small, pitiful creatures. Randolph, come along now.
My uncle shuffled toward Loki like a dog expecting a beating. I didn't feel much love for my uncle at the moment, but I also hated the way Loki treated him. I remembered the connection I'd had to Randolph during my dreams, feeling the overwhelming grief that motivated him.
Randolph, I said, you don't have to go with him.
He glanced at me, and I saw how wrong I was. When he stabbed Blitzen, something inside him had broken. He'd been drawn so far into this evil bargain now, given up so much to get back his dead wife and children, he couldn't imagine any other way.
Loki pointed to the Skofnung blade. The sword, Randolph, get the sword.
Jack's runes pulsed an angry purple. Try it, compadre, and you'll lose more than a couple of fingers.
Randolph hesitated, as people tend to do when they are threatened by talking glowing swords.
Loki's smug confidence wavered. His eyes darkened. His scarred lips curled. I saw how badly he wanted that sword. He needed it for something much more important than a wedding gift.
I put my foot over the Skofnung blade. Jack's right. This isn't going anywhere.
The veins in Loki's neck looked like they might explode. I was afraid he would kill Samira and paint the walls with abstract swaths of dwarf, elf, and inherii. I stared him down anyway. I didn't understand his plan, but I was starting to realize that he needed us alive, at least for now. In the space of a nanosecond, the god regained his composure.
Fine, Magnus, he said breezily. Bring the sword and the stone with you when you bring the bride.
4 days. I'll let you know where. And do get a proper tuxedo.
Randolph, come along. Chop, chop.
My uncle winced.
Loki laughed. Oh, sorry.
He wriggled his pinky and ring finger. Too soon?
He grabbed Randolph's sleeve. The two men shot backward into the coffin portal like they were being sucked out of a moving jet plane. The sarcophagus imploded behind them. Sam stirred. She sat up abruptly, as though her alarm had gone off. Her hijab slipped over her right eye like a pirate's patch.
What's going on?
I felt too numb to explain. I was kneeling next to Blitzen, doing what I could to keep him stable. My hands glowed with enough Frey power to cause a nuclear meltdown, but it wasn't helping. My friend was slipping away. Harth's eyes brimmed with tears. He sat next to Blitz, his polka dot scarf trailing in blood. Every once in a while, he smacked a V sign against his own forehead. Stupid, stupid. Sam's shadow fell across us.
No! No, no, no! What happened?
Hearthstone flew into another sign language tirade. Told you! Too dangerous! Your fault we...
Buddy!
Blitzen pulled weakly at Hearthstone's hands.
Not Sam's... fault. Not yours. Was... my idea.
Hearthstone shook his head. Stupid Valkyrie. Stupid me also. Must be a way to heal you. He looked to me, desperate for a miracle. I hated being a healer. Frey's fripperies, I wished I were a warrior, or a shapeshifter like Alex Fierro, or a runecaster like Hearthstone, or even a berserker like Halfborn, charging into battle in my underwear. Having my friends' lives depend on my abilities, watching the light go out of Blitzen's eyes and knowing there was nothing I could do about it. That was unbearable. Loki wouldn't leave us another choice, I said. We have to find the Skofnung Stone. Hearthstone grunted in frustration. I would do it, for Blitz, but no time. Would take a day at least. He will die. Blitzen tried to say something. No words came out. His head lolled sideways.
No, Sam sobbed. No, he can't die. Where's the stone? I'll go get it myself.
I scanned the tomb, frantic for ideas. My eyes fixed on the only source of light. Samira's spear, lying in dust.
Light. Sunlight.
There was one last miracle I could try. A lame, bottom-shelf miracle. But it was all I had.
We need more time, I said.
So we'll make more time. I wasn't sure Blitzen was still lucid, but I squeezed his shoulder.
We'll bring you back, buddy. I promise.
I stood. I raised my face toward the dome ceiling and imagined the sun overhead. I called on my father, the god of warmth and fertility, the god of living things that broke through the earth to reach the light. The tomb rumbled. Dust rained down. Directly above me, the dome ceiling cracked like an eggshell and a jagged canyon of sunlight spilled through the darkness, illuminating Blitzen's face. As I watched, one of my best friends in the Nine Worlds turned to solid rock. Chapter 19. Should I be nervous that the pilot is praying? The Provincetown Airport was the most depressing place I'd ever been. To be fair, that might have been because I was in the company of a petrified dwarf, a heartbroken elf, a furious Valkyrie, and a sword that would not shut up. Sam had called an Uber car to get us from the Pilgrim Monument. I wondered if she used Uber as a backup for transporting souls to Valhalla. All the way to the airport, crammed in the backseat of a Ford Focus station wagon, I couldn't stop humming, "Fly to the Valkyries." Next to me, Jack hogged the seatbelt and pestered me with questions.
"Can we unsheathe Skofnung again just for a minute? I want to say hi."
"Jack, no. She can't be drawn in sunlight or in the presence of women, and if we did unsheathe her, she'd have to kill somebody."
"Yeah, but except for that, wouldn't it be awesome?" He sighed, his runes lighting up his blade.
"She's so fine."
"Please go into pendant mode."
"Do you think she liked me? I didn't say anything stupid, did I? Be honest."
I bit back a few scathing remarks. It wasn't Jack's fault we were in this predicament. Still, I was relieved when I finally convinced him to turn into a pendant. I told him he needed his beauty rest in case we unsheathed Skofnung later. When we got to the airport, I helped Hearthstone wrestle our granite dwarf out of the station wagon while Sam went into the terminal. The airport itself wasn't much to look at, just a one-room shack for arrivals and departures, a couple of benches out front, and beyond the security fence, two runways for small planes. Sam hadn't explained why we were here. I guess she was using her pilot-y connections to get us a charter flight back to Boston. Obviously, she couldn't fly all four of us under her own power, and Hearthstone was in no shape to cast any more runes. Hearth had spent his last bit of magical energy to summon bubble wrap and strapping tape, using a rune that looked like a regular X. Maybe it was the ancient Viking symbol for shipping materials. Maybe it was the rune for Alfheim Express. Hearthstone was so angry and miserable, I didn't dare ask him. I just stood outside the terminal, waiting for Sam to come back, while Hearth carefully wrapped up his best friend.
We'd come to a sort of truce while waiting for the Uber car. Harth, Sam, and I all felt like stripped high-voltage wires, supercharged with guilt and resentment, ready to kill anyone who touched us. But we knew that wasn't going to help Blitzen. We hadn't discussed it, but we'd formed a silent agreement not to yell and scream and hit each other until later. Right now, we had a dwarf to heal. Finally, Sam emerged from the terminal. She must have stopped by the restroom because her hands and face were still damp. "The Cessna is on its way," she said. "Your instructor's plane?" She nodded. "I had to beg and plead, but Barry's really nice. He understands it's an emergency." "Does he know about..." I gestured around, weakly implying the Nine Worlds, petrified dwarves, undead warriors, evil gods, and all the other messed up things about our lives. "No," Sam said. "And I'd like to keep it that way. I can't fly airplanes if my instructor thinks I'm delusional." She glanced over at Hearthstone's bubble wrapping project. "No change in Blitzen? He hasn't started... crumbling yet?" A slug wriggled down my throat. "Crumbling? Please tell me that's not going to happen." "I hope not, but sometimes..." Sam closed her eyes and took a second to compose herself. "Sometimes after a few days..." As if I needed a reason to feel guiltier. "When we find the Skofnung Stone, there is a way to unpetrify Blitz, right?" That seemed like a question I should have asked before turning my friend into a chunk of granite, but hey, I'd been under a lot of pressure. I hope so, Sam said. That made me feel a whole lot better. Hearthstone looked over at us. He signed to Sam in small angry gestures. "Plane, you will drop Magnus, me. You don't come." Sam looked stung, but she held her hand up next to her face, index finger pointing skyward. "Understand." Hearthstone went back to packaging our dwarf. "Give him time," I told Sam. "It isn't your fault." Sam studied the pavement. "I wish I believed that." I wanted to ask about Loki's control over her, to tell her how bad I felt for her, to promise we would find a way to fight her father, but I guess it was too soon to bring up all that. Her shame was still too raw. "What did Hearthstone mean about dropping us?" I asked. "I'll explain when we're in the air." Sam pulled out her phone and checked the time. "It's Zur. We've got about 20 minutes before the plane lands. Magnus, can I borrow you?" I didn't know what Zur meant, but I followed her to a little grassy area in the middle of the circular driveway. Samira rummaged through her backpack. She pulled out a folded blue piece of cloth like an oversized scarf and spread it on the grass. My first thought? We're having a picnic? Then I realized she was aligning the cloth so it pointed southeast. "That's a prayer rug?" "Yeah," she said. "It's time for noon prayers. Would you stand watch for me?" Wait, what? I felt like she was handing me a newborn baby and asking me to take care of it. In all the weeks I'd known Sam, I'd never seen her pray. I figured she just didn't do it very often. That's what I would have done in her place, as little religious stuff as possible. "How can you pray at a time like this?" She laughed without humor. "The real question is, how can I not pray at a time like this?" "It won't take long. Just stand guard in case, I don't know, trolls attack or something." "Why haven't I ever seen you do this before?" Sam shrugged. "I pray every day, 5 times as required. Usually I just slip away to somewhere quiet. Though if I'm traveling or in a dangerous situation, sometimes I postpone prayers until I'm sure it's safe. That's permissible." "Like when we were in Jotunheim." She nodded. "That's a good for instance. Since we're not in danger at the moment, and since you're here, and since it's time, do you mind?" No. I mean, yeah, sure. Go for it." I'd been in some pretty surreal situations. I'd bellied up to a dwarven bar. I'd run from a giant squirrel through the tree of the universe. I'd rappelled down a curtain into a giant's dining room. But guarding Samira Al-Abbas while she prayed in an airport parking lot, that was a new one. Sam took off her shoes. She stood very still at the foot of her rug, her hands clasped at her stomach, her eyes half closed. She whispered something under her breath. She momentarily brought her hands to her ears, the same gesture we'd used in ASL for "listen carefully." Then she began her prayers. A soft, sing-song chanting of Arabic that sounded like she was reciting a familiar poem or a love song. Sam bowed, straightened, and knelt with her feet tucked under her and pressed her forehead against the cloth. I'm not saying I stared at her. It felt wrong to gawk. But I kept watch from what I hoped was a respectful distance. I have to admit, I was kind of fascinated. Also, maybe a little envious. Even after all that had just happened to her, after being controlled and knocked unconscious by her evil father, Sam seemed momentarily at peace. She was generating her own little bubble of tranquility. I never prayed, because I didn't believe in one all-powerful God, but I wished I'd had Sam's level of faith in something. The prayer didn't take long. Sam folded her rug and stood. "Thanks, Magnus." I shrugged, still feeling like an intruder. "Any better now?" She smirked. "It's not magic." "Yeah, but we see magic all the time. Isn't it hard, like, believing there's something more powerful out there than all these Norse beings we deal with? Especially if, no offense, the big dude doesn't step in to help out?" Sam tucked her prayer mat into her bag. "Not stepping in, not interfering, not forcing. To me, that seems more merciful and more divine, don't you think?" I nodded. "Good point." I hadn't seen Sam crying, but the corners of her eyes were tinged with pink. I wondered if she cried the same way she prayed, privately, stepping away to some quiet place so we didn't notice. She glanced at the sky. "Besides, who says Allah doesn't help?" She pointed to the gleaming white shape of an airplane making its approach. "Let's go meet Barry." Surprise! Not only did we get an airplane and a pilot, we also got Sam's boyfriend. Sam was jogging across the tarmac when the plane's door opened. The first person down the steps was Amir Fadlan, a brown leather jacket over his white Fadlan's Falafel t-shirt, his hair slicked back, and gold-rimmed sunglasses over his eyes so he looked like one of those aviator dudes in a Breitling watch ad. Sam slowed when she saw him, but it was too late for her to hide. She glanced back at me with a panicked expression, then went to meet her betrothed. I missed the first part of their conversation. I was too busy helping Hearthstone lug a stone dwarf to the plane. Sam and Amir stood at the bottom step, trading exasperated hand gestures and pained expressions. When I finally reached them, Amir was pacing back and forth like he was practicing a speech. "I shouldn't even be here. I thought you were in danger. I thought it was life and death. He froze in his tracks. "Magnus?" He stared at me as if I'd just fallen out of the sky, which wasn't fair since I hadn't fallen out of the sky in hours. "Hey, man," I said. "There's totally a good reason for all this. Like, a really good reason. Like, Samira didn't do anything that you might be thinking that she did that was wrong, because she didn't do that." Sam glared at me, not helping. Amir's gaze drifted to Hearthstone. "I recognize you, too. From a couple of months ago at the food court, Sam's so-called math study group." He shook his head in disbelief. "So you're the elf Sam was talking about. And Magnus, you're dead. Sam said she took your soul to Valhalla, and the dwarf," he stared at our bubble-wrapped carry-on Blitzen, "is a statue?" "Temporarily," I said. "That wasn't Sam's fault either." Amir let out one of those crazy laughs you never want to hear, the kind that indicates the brain has developed a few cracks that will not come out with buffing. "I don't even know where to start. Sam, are you okay? Are you in trouble?" Samira's cheeks turned the color of cranberry sauce. "It's complicated. I'm so sorry, Amir. I didn't expect..."
"That he would be here?" said a new voice.
"Darling, he wouldn't take no for an answer." Standing in the plane's doorway was a thin, dark-skinned man, so well-dressed that Blitzen would have wept with joy. Maroon skinny jeans, pastel green shirt, double-breasted vest, and pointy leather boots. The laminated pilot's ID hanging around his neck read, "Barry Al-Jabbar." "My dears," said Barry, "if we're going to keep to our flight plan, you should come aboard. We just need to refuel and we'll be on our way. And as for you, Samira," he raised an eyebrow. He had the warmest gold eyes I'd ever seen. "Forgive me for telling Amir, but when you called, I was worried sick. Amir is a dear friend. And whatever drama is going on between you two, I expect you to fix it. As soon as he heard you were in trouble, he insisted on coming along. So," Barry cupped his hand to his mouth and stage whispered, "we'll just say I'm your chaperone, shall we? Now all aboard!" Barry whirled and disappeared back inside the plane. Hearthstone followed, lugging Blitzen up the steps behind him. Amir wrung his hands. "Sam, I'm trying to understand, really." She looked down at her belt, maybe just realizing she was still wearing her battle axe. I know. "I'll do anything for you," Amir said. "Just don't stop talking to me, okay? Tell me. No matter how crazy it is, tell me." She nodded. "You'd better get on board. I need to do my walk-around inspection." Amir glanced at me once more, as if he was trying to figure out where my death wounds were. Then he climbed the steps. I turned to Sam. He flew out here for you. Your safety is all he cares about.
I know.
That's good, Sam.
I don't deserve it. I wasn't honest with him. I didn't want to infect the one normal part of my life.
The abnormal part of your life is standing right here. Her shoulders slumped.
I'm sorry. I know you're trying to help. I wouldn't change having you in my life, Magnus.
Well, that's good, I said, because there's a whole lot more crazy coming up.
Sam nodded. Speaking of which, you'd better find a seat and buckle in.
Why? Is Barry a bad pilot?
Oh, Barry's an excellent pilot, but he's not flying you.
I am. Straight to Alfheim.
Chapter 20. In case of demonic possession, please follow illuminated signs to the nearest exit.
Barry stood in the aisle to address us, his elbows on the seat backs on either side. His cologne made the plane smell like the Boston Flower Exchange.
So, my dears, have you ever flown in a Citation XLS before?
No, I said. I think I would remember.
The cabin wasn't big, but it was all white leather with gold trim, like a BMW with wings.
Four passenger seats faced each other to form a sort of conference area. Hearthstone and I sat looking forward. Amir sat across from me, and Petrified Blitzen was strapped in opposite Hearth. Sam was up in the pilot seat, checking dials and flipping switches. I thought all planes had doors separating the cockpit from the passenger area, but not the Citation. From where I sat, I could see straight out the front windshield. I was tempted to ask Amir to trade places with me. A view of the restroom would have been less nerve-wracking.
Well, said Barry, as your co-pilot on this flight, it's my job to give you a quick safety briefing. The main exit is here.
He rapped his knuckles on the cabin door through which we'd entered.
In case of emergency, if Sam and I aren't able to open it for you, you
should have listened to me, Magnus Chase.
Barry's voice deepened and tripled in volume. Amir, who was sitting right under his elbow, nearly leaped into my lap. In the cockpit, Sam turned around slowly.
Barry?
I warned you!
Barry's new voice crackled with distortion and fluctuated up and down in pitch.
Yet you fell into Loki's trap!
What's wrong with him? Amir asked. That's not Barry.
No, I agreed. My throat was as dry as a zombie berserker's.
That's my favorite assassin.
Hearthstone looked even more confused than Amir. He couldn't hear the change in Barry's voice, obviously, but he could tell that the safety briefing had gone off the rails.
Now there is no choice, said Barry, not Barry. Once you heal your friend, find me in Jotunheim, and I will give you the information you need to defeat Loki's plan.
I studied the co-pilot's face. His gold eyes looked unfocused, but otherwise I couldn't see anything different about him.
You're the goat killer, I said. The guy who was watching me from the tree branch at the feast.
Amir couldn't stop blinking.
Goat killer? Tree branch?
Seek out Heimdall, said the distorted voice. He will point you in my direction. Bring the other, Alex Fierro. She is now your only hope for success.
And that covers everything. Any questions?
Barry's voice had returned to normal. He smiled contentedly, like he could think of no better way to spend his day than flying back and forth from Cape Cod, helping his friends, and channeling the voices of otherworldly ninjas. Amir, Hearth, and I shook our heads vehemently.
No questions, I said. Not a single one.
I locked eyes with Sam. She gave me a shrug and a headshake like, yes, I heard. My co-pilot was briefly possessed. What do you want me to do about it?
Okay, then, Barry patted Blitzen's granite noggin.
Headsets are in the compartments next to you if you want to talk to us in the cockpit. It's a very short flight to Norwood Memorial. Sit back and enjoy.
Enjoy was not the word I would have used. Small confession. Not only had I never flown in a Citation XLS, I had never flown in an airplane. My first time probably should not have been in an 8-seat Cessna flown by a girl my age who'd only been taking lessons for a few months. That wasn't Sam's fault. I had nothing to compare it to, but the takeoff seemed smooth. At least we got airborne without any fatalities.
Still, my fingernails left permanent gouges in the armrests. Every bump of turbulence jolted me so badly, I felt nostalgic for our old friend Stanley, the canyon-diving 8-legged flying horse. Well, almost. Amir declined to use a headset, maybe because his brain was already overloaded with crazy Norse information. He sat with his arms crossed, staring morosely out the window, as if wondering whether we would ever land in the real world again.
Sam's voice crackled in my headphones. We've reached cruising altitude. 32 minutes left in flight.
Everything good up there? I asked.
Yeah, the connection beeped. There, no one else is on this channel. Our friend seems okay now. Anyway, there's no need to worry. I've got the controls.
Who, me? Worry?
From what I could see, Barry seemed pretty chill at the moment. He was kicking back in the co-pilot seat, staring at his iPad. I wanted to believe he was keeping an eye on important aviation readings, but I was pretty sure he was playing Candy Crush.
Any thoughts? I asked Sam. I mean, about Goat Killer's advice?
Static. Then, he said we should seek him out in Jotunheim. So he's a giant. That doesn't necessarily mean he's bad. My father... She hesitated, probably trying to get the word sour taste out of her mouth. He has lots of enemies. Whoever Goat Killer is, he's got some powerful magic. He was right about Provincetown. We should listen to him. I should have listened sooner.
Don't do that, I said. Don't beat yourself up. Amir tried to focus on me.
Sorry, what?
Not you, man. I tapped the headset mic, talking to Sam.
Amir mouthed the silent, ah.
He returned to practicing his forlorn stare out the window.
Amir isn't on this channel, Sam asked.
No.
After I drop you guys, I'm going to take the Skofnung sword to Valhalla for safekeeping. I can't take Amir into the hotel, but I'm going to try to show him what I can. Show him my life.
Good call. He's strong, Sam. He can handle it.
A 3-second count of white noise.
I hope you're right.
I'll also update the gang on floor 19.
What about Alex Fierro?
Sam glanced back at me.
It was weird seeing her a few feet away, but hearing her voice right in my ears.
Bringing her along is a bad idea, Magnus. You saw what Loki could do to me. Imagine what he...
I could imagine, but I also sensed that Goat Killer had a point. We would need Alex Fierro. Her arrival in Valhalla wasn't a coincidence. The Norns, or some other weird prophecy gods, had interwoven her fate with ours.
I don't think we should underestimate her, I said, remembering her fighting those wolves and riding a bucking lindworm.
Also, I trust her. I mean, as much as you can trust somebody who has cut your head off.
Do you have any idea how to find the god Heimdall?
The static sounded heavier, angrier.
Unfortunately, yes, Sam said. Get ready. We're almost in position.
For landing in Norwood? I thought you said we were going to Alfheim.
You are. I'm not. The flight path to Norwood puts us just over the optimal drop zone.
Drop zone? I really hoped I had misheard her.
Look, I have to concentrate on flying this plane. Ask Hearthstone. My headphones went silent.
Hearthstone was having a staring contest with Blitzen. The dwarf's granite face poked out from his bubble-wrap cocoon, his expression frozen in dying agony. Hearthstone didn't look much happier. The misery swirling around him was almost as easy to see as his blood-stained, polka-dotted scarf.
Alfheim, I signed. How do we get there?
Jump, Hearth told me. My stomach dropped out from under me.
Jump? Jump out of the plane?
Hearth stared past me, the way he does when he's considering how to explain something complicated in sign language. Usually something I won't like.
Alfheim, Kingdom of Air, Light, he signed. Can only be entered, he pantomimed free-falling.
This is a jet plane, I said. We can't jump, we'll die.
Not die, Hearth promised. Also, not jump exactly, just...
He made a poof gesture, which did not reassure me. We cannot die until we save Blitzen. For a guy who rarely made a sound, Hearthstone could speak in defiant shouts when he wanted to. He'd just given me my marching orders. Poof, out of this plane, fall to Alfheim, save Blitzen. Only after that would it be okay for me to die.
Amir shifted in his seat. Magnus, you look nervous.
Yeah. I was tempted to make up some simple explanation, something that wouldn't add any more cracks to Amir's generous mortal brain. But we were beyond that now. Amir was fully in Sam's life, for better or worse, normal or abnormal. He'd always been kind to me. He'd fed me when I was homeless, treated me like a person when most people pretended I was invisible. He'd come to our rescue today without knowing any details just because Sam was in trouble. I couldn't lie to him.
Apparently, Hearth and I are going to go poof.
I told him my marching orders. Amir looked so lost I wanted to give the guy a hug.
Until last week, he said, my biggest worry was where to expand our falafel franchise. Jamaica Plain or Chestnut Hill. Now I'm not even sure what world we're flying through.
I checked to make sure my headset mic was switched off.
Amir, Sam's the same as she's always been. She's brave. She's strong. I know that.
She's also head over heels crazy about you, I said. She didn't ask for any of this weirdness in her life. Her biggest concern is that it doesn't mess up her future with you. Believe that.
He hung his head like a puppy in a kennel.
I'm trying, Magnus. It's just so strange.
Yeah, I said. Here's a heads up. It's going to get stranger. I switched on my microphone. Sam?
I could hear that entire conversation, she announced.
Ah, apparently I hadn't figured out the headset controls after all.
I'll kill you later, she said. Right now, your exit is coming up.
Wait, won't Barry notice if we just disappear?
He's mortal. His brain will recalibrate. After all, people don't just vanish off jet planes in mid-flight. By the time we land in Norwood, he probably won't even remember you were here.
I wanted to think I was a little more memorable than that, but I was too nervous to worry about it.
Next to me, Hearthstone unlatched his seatbelt. He pulled off his scarf and tied it around Blitzen, fashioning a sort of makeshift harness.
Good luck, Sam told me. I'll see you back in Midgard, assuming, you know.
Assuming we live, I thought. Assuming we can heal Blitzen. Assuming our luck is better than it has been the past 2 days. Or ever.
Between one heartbeat and the next, the Cessna disappeared. I found myself floating in the sky, my headphones plugged into nothing at all. Then I fell.
Chapter 21. Loiterers will be shot, then arrested, and shot again. Blitzen once told me that dwarves never left home without a parachute. Now I understood the wisdom in that. Hearthstone and I plummeted through the frigid air, me waving my arms and screaming, Hearth in a perfect swan dive with granite Blitzen tied to his back. Hearth glanced over at me reassuringly, as if to say, Don't worry, the dwarf is bubble-wrapped. My only response was more incoherent screaming because I didn't know the ASL for, Holy freaking ah! We punched through a cloud and everything changed. Our fall slowed. The air turned warm and sweet. The sunlight intensified, blinding me. We hit the ground. Well, sort of. My feet touched down on freshly mown grass, and I bounced right off, feeling like I weighed about 20 pounds. I astronaut skipped across the lawn until I found my balance. I squinted through the searing sunlight, trying to get my bearings. Acres of landscaping, tall trees, a big house in the distance. Everything seemed haloed in fire. No matter which direction I turned, I felt as though a spotlight was shining straight in my face. Hearthstone grabbed my arm. He pressed something into my hands, a pair of dark sunglasses. I put them on and the stabbing pain in my eyes subsided.
Thanks, I muttered.
Is it this bright all the time? Hearthstone frowned. I must have been slurring my words. He was having trouble reading my lips. I repeated the question in sign language.
Always bright, Hearth agreed. You get used to it.
He scanned our surroundings as if looking for threats. We landed on the front lawn of a big estate. Low stone walls hedged the property, a golf course-sized expanse of well-kept flower beds and thin, willowy trees that looked as if they'd been pulled upward by gravity as they grew. The house was a Tudor-style mansion with leaded glass windows and conical turrets.
Who lives here? I signed to Hearth. President of Alfheim?
Just a family. The Makepieces. He spelled out their name.
They must be important, I signed.
Hearth shrugged. Regular, middle class. I laughed, then realized he wasn't joking. If this was a middle class family in Alfheim, I didn't want to split a lunch tab with the one percenters. We should go, Hearth signed. Makepieces don't like me. He readjusted his scarf harness for Blitzen, who probably weighed no more than a regular backpack in Alfheim. Together we headed for the road. I have to admit, the lighter gravity made me feel, well, lighter. I bounded along, covering 5 feet with every step. I had to restrain myself from leaping farther. With my inherent strength, if I wasn't careful, I might have found myself jumping over the rooftops of middle-class mansions. As far as I could tell, Alfheim was just row after row of estates like the Makepieces, each property at least several acres, each lawn dotted with flower beds and topiaries. And the cobblestone driveways, black luxury SUVs gleamed. The air smelled like baked hibiscus and crisp dollar bills. Sam had said our flight path to Norwood would put us over the best drop zone. Now that made sense. In the same way Nidavellir resembled Southie, Alfheim reminded me of the posh suburbs west of Boston.
Wellesley, maybe, with its huge houses and pastoral landscapes, its winding roads, picturesque creeks, and sleepy aura of absolute safety. Assuming you belong there. On the downside, the sunlight was so harsh it accentuated every imperfection. Even one stray leaf or wilted flower in a garden stood out as a glaring problem. My own clothes looked dirtier. I could see every pore on the back of my hands and the veins under my skin. I also understood what Hearthstone meant about Alfheim being made of air and light. The whole place seemed unreal, like it was whisked together from cotton candy fibers and might dissolve with a splash of water. Walking across the spongy ground, I felt uneasy and impatient. The super dark sunglasses only did so much to alleviate my headache. After a few blocks, I signed to Hearthstone, "Where are we going?" He pursed his lips. "Home." I caught his arm and made him stop. "Your home?" I signed. "Where you grew up?" Hearth stared at the nearest quaint garden wall. Unlike me, he wore no sunglasses. In the brilliant daylight, his eyes glittered like crystal formations. "Skofnung Stone is at home," he signed, "with Father." The sign for Father was an open hand, palm facing out, thumb across the forehead. It reminded me of L for loser. Given what I knew about Hearth's childhood, that seemed appropriate. Once, in Jotunheim, I'd done some healing magic on Hearth. I'd gotten a glimpse of the pain he carried around inside. He'd been mistreated and shamed while growing up, mostly because of his deafness. Then his brother had died. I didn't know the details, and his parents had blamed Hearth. He couldn't possibly want to go back to a home like that. I remembered how strongly Blitzen had protested the idea, even when he knew he was going to die. "Don't make Hearth go. Not worth it, kid." Yet here we were. "Why?" I signed. "Why would your father, loser, have the Skofnung Stone?" Instead of answering, Hearthstone nodded in the direction we'd come. Everything was so bright in Elfworld, I hadn't noticed the flashing lights until the sleek, black town car pulled up directly behind us. Along the sedan's front grille, red and blue sequencers pulsed. Behind the windshield, two elves in business suits scowled at us. The Alfheim Police Department had come to say hello. "Can we help you?" asked the first cop. Right then, I knew we were in trouble. In my experience, no cop ever said, "Can we help you?" if he had any actual desire to help. Another giveaway? Cop number one's hand was resting on the butt of his sidearm. Cop number two edged around the passenger side, also looking ready to break out some helpful deadly force. Both elves were dressed like plainclothes detectives, in dark suits and silk ties, with ID badges clipped to their belts. Their short-cropped hair was as blonde as Hearthstone's. They had the same sort of pale eyes and eerily calm expressions. Otherwise, they looked nothing like my friend. The cops seemed taller, spindlier, more alien. They exuded a cold air of disdain, as though they had personal AC units installed under their shirt collars. The other thing I found strange, they spoke. I'd spent so much time around Hearthstone, who communicated in eloquent silence, that hearing an elf speak was really jarring. It just seemed wrong. Both cops focused on Hearthstone. They looked right through me as if I didn't exist. "I asked you a question, pal," the first cop said. "Is there a problem here?" Hearthstone shook his head. He edged back, but I caught his arm. Retreating would only make things worse. "We're good," I said. "Thanks, officers." The detective stared at me like I was from another world, which, to be fair, I was. The ID tag on cop number one's belt read, "Sunspot." He didn't look much like a sunspot. Then again, I guess I didn't look like much of a chase. Cop number two's ID read, "Wildflower." With a handle like that, I wanted him to be wearing a Hawaiian shirt or at least a floral pattern tie, but his outfit was just as boring as his partner's. Sunspot wrinkled his nose as if I smelled like a white sparrow. "Where'd you learn elfish, Thick? That accent is horrible." "Thick?" I asked. Wildflower smirked at his partner. "What do you bet elfish isn't his first language? Illegal hoose fader would be my guess." I wanted to point out that I was a human speaking English, and it was my first language. Also, my only language. Elfish and English just happened to be the same, like Hearth's Alf Sign Language was the same as American Sign Language. I doubted the cops would listen or care. The way they spoke was a little strange to my ears, a sort of old-fashioned, aristocratic American accent I'd heard on newsreels and movies from the 1930s. "Look, guys," I said, "we're just taking a walk." "In a nice neighborhood," said Sunspot, "where I'm guessing you don't live.
The makepieces down the road, they called in a report. Somebody trespassing, loitering. We take that sort of thing seriously, Thick.
I had to tamp down my anger. As a homeless person, I'd been a frequent target for rough treatment by law enforcement. My darker-skinned friends got it even worse. So, during the 2 years I lived on the street, I learned a whole new level of caution when dealing with friendly neighborhood police officers. And yet, I didn't like being called a Thick, whatever that was.
"Officers," I said, "we've been walking for maybe 5 minutes. We're heading to my friend's house. How is that loitering?"
Hearthstone signed to me, "Careful."
Sunspot frowned. "What was that? Some kind of gang sign? Speak Elfish."
"He's deaf," I said.
"Deaf?"
Wildflower's face scrunched up in disgust.
"What kind of elf?"
"Whoa, partner." Sunspot swallowed. He tugged at his collar like his personal AC had stopped working.
"Is that... that's gotta be, you know, Mr. Alderman's kid."
Wildflower's expression shifted from contempt to fear. It would have been kind of satisfying to watch, except that a fearful cop was way more dangerous than a disgusted one.
"Mr. Hearthstone?" Wildflower asked. "Is that you?"
Hearthstone nodded glumly.
Sunspot cursed. "All right, both of you in the car."
"Whoa, why?" I demanded. "If you're arresting us, I want to know the charges."
"We're not arresting you, Thick," Sunspot growled. "We're taking you to see Mr. Alderman."
"After that," Wildflower added, "you won't be our problem anymore." His tone made it sound like we'd be no one's problem, since we'd be buried under a lovely, well-tended flower bed somewhere. The last thing I wanted to do was get in the car, but the cops tapped their fingers on their elfish firearms, showing us just how helpful they were prepared to be. I climbed into the back of the cruiser. Chapter 22. Pretty sure Hearthstone's dad is a cow-abducting alien. It was the nicest cop car I'd ever been in, and I'd been in quite a few. The black leather interior smelled of vanilla. The plexiglass divider was squeaky clean. The bench seat had a massage feature so I could relax after a hard day of loitering. Obviously, they served only the finest criminals here in Alfheim. After a mile of comfortable cruising, we pulled off the main road and stopped at a pair of iron gates monogrammed with a fancy A. On either side, 10-foot-tall stone walls were topped with decorative spikes to keep out the upper-middle-class riffraff who lived down the street. From the tops of the gateposts, security cameras swiveled to study us. The gates opened. As we drove through into Hearthstone's family estate, my jaw nearly